Log Talk Radio.
You ain't listening, you a... Welcome to the war room. We got Dez.
You.
Kim. Jimmy. PJ. Huh? B. Austin, a hot block commander.
Amazing man. Good evening, sports fans, and welcome once again to another edition of The Show. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan. I'm only here with you guys for about 30 minutes tonight, but alongside me at the War Room Roundtable is the greatest team in the history of sports, and they will hold it down so it will forever and always be held. Akil's not here with us tonight either, but we got Jimmy Williams, B. Austin,
yep,
and Paul Johnson. Tonight, we're going to discuss the hottest sports topics of the past week, including the Ohio State situation, Kareem's comments, the retirement of Shaq Fu, the NBA Finals, and much, much more. Like usual, we want to hear from you guys, so whenever you have something to say, call in and say it. You can reach us on the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012. We want to give a quick shout-out to our people at the Broad Street Line, Imaginary Players, Buzz on Broad, and Ball Control Radio. We'll let you know on our Facebook page when and where you can catch all of these guys. And if you're on an Android or iPhone, don't forget to download our free War Room Sports mobile app in the Apple App Store or the Android Market. But right now, it's about time for those birthdays.
It's my birthday. Yay!
All right, first up today. First of all, what's up, fellas?
What's going on, little brother?
I'm really excited about tonight's show.
All right, well, okay. Let's it's time to get it in. First birthday is Lawrence Wendell Larry Fole, better known as Lex Luger, turns 53 today. Jimmy, what do you think of when you think of Lex Luger?
Yo, Lex Luger was one of my favorite wrestlers coming up as a kid. I think of the torture rack for one. Then I think of the time that he joined up with Ric Flair, who happens to be the greatest wrestler ever, then, you know, turned his back on him. But I don't want to get into that because it brings back a lot of scars. And also, I just found out recently that he used to put Miss Elizabeth in the torture rack, too, in his spare time.
Yo, Lex Luger always had the little joints tied around his biceps, looking like, you know, he was trying to do a needle at any given time. Be awesome. What you remember about Lex?
Yo, when I think of Lex Luger, I'm reminded of the movie The Wrestler.
With Andy Rourke.
Why he still Miss Elizabeth, man? That wasn't right, man.
Yeah, I didn't know until last week when we gave that shout out to Macho Man that Elizabeth died at his house doing a drug overdose. So, you know, drugs weren't the only thing they was doing. But shout out to Lex Luger. The next birthday, we got one of our favorite players. We got Earl Antoine Boykins.
It's my birthday. Yay!
Earl Boykins turns 35 today. B. Austin, Earl Boykins.
Yo, when you're that little, do you ever really hit your 30s?
He like Arnold from Different Strokes or something. Like,
yo, my man Earl Gaines, if he was 5 inches taller, would we be forgetting about AI, yo? That's how nice he is offensively.
That's what you say. I don't know about the AI comment. He had a better jump shot than AI, but that's where it ends.
When I think of the boy Earl Boykins, I have nothing but admiration for his game for the simple fact that, yo, dude be competing. And when you watch it, it's like, you know, you forget that it's real. Like, it looks like exhibition basketball. He's so small compared to the rest of the players on the floor. Yo.
And don't forget, we're going to have our War Room campaign to get Earl Boykins into the All-Star game next year.
No doubt.
We're
going to
get him on the right-hand ballot.
Absolutely.
And we expect all y'all out there ready on that to vote.
Question for y'all. Who you take, Earl Boykins or Nate Robinson? Who's the better scorer of the little dudes?
Yo. Earl Boykins. Oh, that's a good question. Because Nate.
That is a good question. I think I take Earl just because of all the stuff that comes with Nate.
Yeah, that's true, too. That's true,
with
too.
Earl, with Nate, you get a lot of talent, but you get a lot of boneheadedness. He's cool. Young.
Korean.
Put it that way. He's
Korean
young.
Yeah, him and, all right, him, so and, I, him and J.R. Right. Smith drinking the same watering hole.
Yeah, they're both young. But our third birthday of the day is one Mary Abigail, better known as Abby Wambach.
My birthday, yay!
I can start it off. Abby Wambach, you know, I remember her distinctly from the Beijing Olympics because she was on the team, but she didn't play because she broke her leg in the last game before the Olympics. And that's my fondest memory of Abby Wambach. Jimmy.
Yo, I'm not even going front. I'm not familiar with her body of work. I did, however, look it up, you know, based upon her birthday coming up. And it's the same thing that you said. That's the only thing that I've, you know, remotely remember about her. Other than that, I'm not familiar with her body of work. She can't do basketball.
I mean, she was like 3-time soccer player of the year or something like that. But if you don't watch soccer, then why would you care? I don't care. Be awesome. You care?
Yo, I'm going to do less fronting than Jimmy, who did no fronting at all. Yo, I'm not familiar with her body to work, her work. Who is she? Yo? And I watch soccer. But
do you watch women's soccer?
I didn't know there was such a thing.
All right, so our last birthday of the day is one Azahir Ali Hakeem, former wide receiver, best known for his time with the St. Louis Rams. He turns 34 today. B. Austin, Az Hakeem.
Overrated. Overrated. Yo, he was the beneficiary of Isaac Bruce and Ricky Poole and the boy that looked like Sam Cassell's brother. Yo, he holds all his game checks to them dudes, man. And Kurt. Yo, dude couldn't do nothing but run real fast, and he wasn't even that fast. He had the shaky bees, though. I'm done.
Jimmy.
Yo, I think of another gangbanger with speed. He was very fast. I don't think he was overrated because I don't think he was ever rated to begin with. But he was fast, though. I give you that. And he was fast as all get out on Madden, too. But in terms of being overrated,
yo,
I don't think he was rated.
Yo, they rated everybody on the greatest show on turf, man. They drank the Kool-Aid on all them dudes.
Hi, look who just fell into the gig. Look who just walked up. Bayon.
Isaac King was the best number three receiver in the history of the NFL.
Number three? Wasn't he like number four or five, though?
No, he was three. As soon as he came in number one,
three.
He didn't do nothing.
Ricky Poole was four. So, yeah, Isaac
Yo,
King
I didn't know
three.
They had
Ricky
so many
Poole
receivers.
Four.
They had cats coming out everywhere. They was throwing the ball to Mali Mauna. Everybody touched the rock back then. Go ahead.
But do you remember that show that you had me watch with the top 10 greatest receiving corps of all time?
Yeah,
Nicole
yeah, yeah.
They were high. They were like number two, three, something like that.
Yo, they was number one, wasn't it?
They might have, and Isaac King was a part of that.
If he was number one option, he wouldn't have been. But, yo, the numbers they put up were crazy, and everybody caught the rock from the fullback to the backup tight end. I think Coach caught a couple touchdowns that year.
Yeah, I think Kurt Warner threw a couple to himself.
Yeah, Falk caught, like, for 800 yards or 1,000 yards that year.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That's the birthday for the day.
Yeah.
And the birthdays, of course, were brought to you by Days of Beauty Hair Salon. Go get your wig flipped. Jimmy, let everybody know what happened this week while they were on the grind.
Yes, sir. There's a lot of good, juicy stories out there. First, I want to talk about the Canadian group purchasing the Atlanta Thrashers and moving the team to Winnipeg. What's your guys' opinion on that?
Man, my opinion is hockey, North American hockey, is
a Canadian-dominated sport, and they know it. So they, I guess they figured, man, we're going to buy this team that's in this struggling hockey market, and we're going to put it up here where it belongs.
So you think it's a good move?
Yeah, it has to be. They hockey fiends up in Canada.
Yeah.
So Winnipeg is going to do a whole lot more for that franchise than Atlanta could ever dream of. So it's a great move.
Got you. Anybody else got an opinion on this move?
Yo, that's funny because I think it's a well-placed strategic play because none of the guys that I've seen recently in Atlanta look like hockey players or hockey fans. And although they like to hold a stick with a broke wrist, it ain't got nothing to do with hitting a puck. So,
yo, I ain't gonna touch that one. No rainbow. I'm gonna leave that alone.
The AT aliens are not interested in hockey.
What they interested in?
No, don't do that.
Okay, we're gonna leave that one alone. As a matter of fact, let's move to another story.
Shout out to all the Atlanta boys.
Yo, I don't know if you guys saw this, but on the internet, there's footage that has been leaked of Shane Mosley in the 10th round asking his trainer to quit. He wanted to quit the fight before it was over. But Nassim wasn't having it. I got this from Deadspin. Deadspin has a story, and there's video that's leaked. And Nassim told him to man up pretty much and make him finish the fight. But Shane was trying to get out of there.
Told y'all, man. Shane just wanted to collect his check and go down the towel and land the bathtub, man. Shane is a noodle, man. The fight wasn't even that brutal to the point where somebody would have wanted to quit. I mean, he was getting beat, but he wasn't getting beat up.
I feel sorry for Nassim having to deal with that.
Yeah, because he's a hell of a trainer, and he's from the crib. But I'm glad you told me that, because that's the last pay-per-view money that Shane will get out of my pocket.
Austin, you got any thoughts on this?
Sugar Tank.
Yo, this goes out to Bella, yo. Never mind, man. Never mind.
He was an open letter to Bella.
You can't be serious with a coward, man. He's a coward. He's in this area, and if I see him, I'll let him know. And as far as him being a professional boxer, FOH, I'm 6'1 and 250. Get at me, dog.
you got any thoughts on this, Doc Bay?
Yo, all I have to say is that's sad. Like, that's sad that, come on, man, all these people paying their money, you're training, you got trainers that's training you, and you're like, yo, all right, I'm done. Just let me collect my check.
Hey, yo.
That's sad.
Hey, yo, excuse me. One second. Yo, Brother Bayon can actually speak on this because Brother Bayon once rumbled a whole football team by himself.
Yo, yes, he did.
Yo, Shane Mosley.
You are gay.
Yo, all right, I'm going to leave that one alone. Let's move on. Couple other stories. Terrell Pryor. There was a lot of talk about him this week, and some students saying that he had, you know, six different cars driving to campus or what have you. And, you know, there was a lot of speculation about him having different cars. Now, his lawyers came out and said that right now he has a Nissan 350Z that he paid $11,400, and he got that after he traded in his Charger, which he got $7,300 for, and everything's legit. His mom signed for it. And what his lawyer said was the reason that he's been in so many cars is because the Charger was giving him so many problems that the car dealer was giving him loans while they worked on it. So do you guys believe this story, or you think it's a situation where maybe it could be legitimate? And because of the trustless situation, people are just trying to blow it out of proportion.
Yo, I think they shouldn't have – why are they just looking at Ohio State, where I think a lot of us know this goes on nationwide, but Ohio State keeps coming in the news. And with the Chargers, anytime I go out of town, my car of choice is the Charger. So I don't know what kind of problems he's talking about. That's a solid piece of machinery right there.
Yo, man. If Terrell Pryor or his mama or the car dealerships expect me to believe any of that, they must think I'm...
Yeah, you might see me all blue, all red, every day. I'm 50 Tyson.
F-O-H,
Austin, what's your opinion?
Pryor.
Yo, go ahead and pay these men, man.
You say what?
Go ahead and
pay these men. That's the bottom line, just pay these men, huh?
Pigs, man.
I mean, yeah, that may be the case. But I mean, you know what? Let's say we give him the benefit of the doubt, right? And that he was driving loners, and you know, he does have a new car. A lot of this came about because of the Trussell situation, and now that Trussell is gone, a lot of people on campus, as well as other players, are blaming these other players for the coach being gone, which is unfair, because you know the coach, you know, he had his part to do with the whole situation. So
I still don't think it's unfair.
And why is this coming up now?
Trussell, he's gone because he was, you know, taking up for them, you know, not snitching on them for the wrong that they were doing. Like we said, we know the rules are stupid. The rules are stupid.
You should be able to sell
your own memorabilia. You know what I'm saying? You should be able to sell your own stuff. It's yours.
Yeah.
But
exactly. I don't know nothing about
taking up for them.
I don't know nothing about that. All I know is that if we're paying these men the way that they should be paid, they could be driving German instead of driving Detroit.
The real story, though, Jimmy, was that dude's license had been suspended for what? 2 months, 2 weeks?
Now, according to his attorney, that's not true either. They said that the reason he had lost his license is because when he had one of the loaner cars, they didn't have the documentation for the insurance, but it has since been provided, and his license was reinstated. So who knows what the truth is? The thing about it is Ohio State football is so big, it could be a situation where they're fixing his license situation as well as the car dealer stepping up in that area.
Yeah, well, you know, the witch hunt is on now, though, so they need to be careful.
Yeah, but they got like Buddy Garrity on their side, so they're going to fix this whole situation up.
Uh-huh.
it sounds like Terrell Pryor's attorney's name, Dewey Cheatham.
Let me ask you guys a question. I was telling Monica this story, and her response was, he's not even that good. Do you think he's even a star player? Do you think that he's, you know, on a level where all this kind of foolery would happen to protect him?
Well, Jim, to answer that question, we don't really have to answer the question. Just look at the kind of cars they were giving him. If he was they said one of the cars had like 80,000 miles on it, cost like 11 grand. Like, if he was a better player, he'd be getting better whips. So,
Let's move on. I got to ask you guys about real quick. The one is, did you guys hear about, this comes from my favorite news source, TMZ. Ron Artest is out clubbing, and a fight broke out, and of course he's little now and like is making peace. He's like broke him up, you know, and talked to him, trying to calm him down. So Ron Artest's whole demeanor has changed over the last couple of years. He's like trying to be like a model citizen now.
Yeah.
What's you guys' opinion of everything that's going on with your man, QB, breaking up fights in the streets?
I think QB just trying to be a better person, man. I commend him for it. But, you know, because you just figure a few years back, you see a fight in the street. Ryan
he probably would have jumped in the joint.
Beat both of them up for no reason.
But do you think that because of the malice in the palace, do you think people will ever let him, like, you know, live that down, so to speak?
No.
Probably not. That's why little things like this, even when he's doing right, it's a big story. You know?
Not a certain segment of the populace that will always be, and you know, at this round, at the changes in this gentleman's character and demeanor. I mean,
your mic is failing you right now.
My mic doesn't sound.
Check one.
Doc Bay, you got any thoughts on this?
Yeah, on our test. Yeah, shout out to him, especially last year after, you know, talking about seeing his psychiatrist and, you know, all the trauma he's probably seen and endured in terms of, like, you know, growing up in QB and seeing a dude get stabbed with a broken leg of a chair at a basketball game and dying.
Yeah.
And the malice in the palace and all that stuff. You know, he's probably at a point in his life where he's like, look, guys, the violence isn't worth it, so shout out to QB.
Yeah, that's crazy. Last story. Ricky Rubio. It's reports that Ricky Rubio was finally getting ready to show up in Minnesota. What's your opinion on this? What took so long, and do you think does it even matter at this point?
Yeah, with Rubio, I had a chance to watch him play on NBA TV, and he looked like, you know, a below average NBA point guard. Now, he has his passing ability. Like, now we all play video games. His passing ability would be like on 100. His offensive IQ would be like on 100. But in terms of like his jump shot seems like a little bit better than Rondo's, and his foot speed, lateral quickness for the NBA point guard position is not that good. But I mean, his jump shot is not as bad as Rondo's. It's just like he shoots worse than Derrick Rose, so he's somewhere in between Derrick Rose J and Rondo's J. You see what I'm saying? Really? So I don't know how he's going to be able to get it done in the NBA unless he's putting up, like, 2,000 jumpers a day with a very good shooting coach.
Yeah, hey, well, my whole thing on Rubio coming over to America 2 years after he was drafted, for me, the jury's still out on whether the guy can play in the NBA or not. You know, I haven't seen enough even in international competition to make a call on that. But, I was having conversations on our Facebook page today, and, I was just trying to explain to the people that, it was actually Ricky Rubio's people. Like, the Timberwolves were trying to make deals to have a buyout of his contract when they first drafted him. But I think his people may have pulled him back thinking that he might not be ready for that NBA grind yet. Plus, he was really young at the time. So,
Let me ask you a question.
Good.
Do you think that him coming now, is he trying to get that money before they lock out?
I don't know, because can he at this point? Because he's not playing until next year. So any deal that he makes, plus, he may still be under the rules and stipulations of the rookie contract from when he got drafted. But I'm not sure. I have to
I just thought
about that. Maybe he came in now because he's trying to get that money. But when you think I'll give you an idea. I saw him play internationally, and he was getting work. He was getting work from Khalid El Amin, who was like as old as dirt at this point and out of shape, and he still was getting Rubio work. So I don't know how good he can be in the NBA, but let's say he can be, anywhere to what they think he can. He could be average at best. They still have, Kevin Love there, and they have the number two pick, so they may end up with Derek Williams. They can have a nice young nucleus if he can play at all.
Yeah, I mean,
I think there's some advantages and strengths that he has. As Akil alluded to, his IQ is pretty high. His passing is great, but
his mic is
he got
telling.
A low opinion of the boy, huh?
we're having some mic problems. But I would say Rubio's height is gonna be an advantage. And being able to see over defenses. So
How tall is he?
I think it'd be all right. He's about 6'4".
6'4", they say.
I didn't even know he was that tall.
Me either. He looked little when I saw him play on when I saw him play internationally, he didn't look that tall. But he was getting roasted by Khalid El Amin. I was like, maybe he should stay there.
Yeah, he was really young and really frail looking when he got drafted. So I really don't blame him for not coming over right away. I don't see why people make a big deal out of that. Like, it happens all the time. I just think because he was such a high pick, then people are expecting a little more from him.
Had he come over then and
look like he wasn't physically ready, then everybody would be bashing him. So
a lot of it is our opinion of the NBA. Like, we think, like, how could you not want to play in the NBA? But some international players that hear him talk, they like, look, I'm going to play over here. You know what I mean? Like, some of them aren't as pressed as we are, but we grow up in the States, and we're like, what? You got a chance to play in the NBA? That's like every little kid's dream. Some of them,
Barcelona. His buyout over there when he was drafted was around $6 million. So that was around the same kind of money he was going to make over here.
On his
rookie contract, he's going to make like $2 million a year. So he's still paid.
Exactly.
So
anyway, the last story. That's what happened when y'all were on the grind, which, of course, is brought to you by Philadelphia Auto Design. Get your rim game up like Terrell Pryor.
See, y'all ready to pass that rock?
No doubt. Yes, sir.
All right, so we're gonna play a quick round of Pass the Rock. If you don't listen every week, if this is your first time listening, Pass the Rock, it's a little segment we do when all five of your hosts get to vent on their chosen sports story of the week. So since I'm the point guard of the bunch, I'm going to bring it up this week, and I'm about to. Man, this is Devin, by the way, if y'all don't know the voice. I just got a quick bar to spit at my man, Scotty. I'm tripping, tipping about his comments, you know, earlier in the week about Michael Jordan being the best scorer of all time and LeBron James possibly being the greatest player of all time. Scotty, I don't really know what your motives were. I don't really know what you were smoking on. But you played with that man for a good amount of years. That man, even though you are a very talented ball player, was solely responsible for a lot of the success you had in your career. Take a look at that Dream Team photo and recognize that Dominique Wilkins should have been standing there in your spot. Take a look at that Top 50 photo in 1996 and recognize that you probably shouldn't have been invited into the building that night. Stop tripping. That's all I got to say. And with that, I'm going to pass the rock to my man B. Austin, the hot block commander.
Scottie Pippen has had a wonderful career. You know, I definitely think at this point he took the Paul Pressey point forward to new heights. I mean, there was nothing on a basketball court that he couldn't do from a talent and athletic standpoint. I don't care what you were smoking on. I don't care why you were tripping, because you are dead to me. You came out your mouth with something that you know that you don't believe. And so for me, looking back through the years and your career, I have to wonder, how long has the jealousy and the hatred been seething in your heart and underneath your skin? I mean, is it because Mike put up 30 a game? Is it because Mike had all the attention he had, the shoe deal? Is it because you went broke and couldn't afford your jet and Mike can go to the club and blow $1 million? What is it that caused you to hate the way that you hate it? Is it because of your nose? Is it because of the way you look? Is it his quality of John? I don't understand, dog. Help me understand. This is an open letter. Now, you came at my man, so I'm going to come at you. Scotty, it's about who see who first.
Kill, man.
I got it. Now, as everybody on in the war room and mostly on the threads and people that know
man,
me.
Kill, what's wrong with your man?
They understand that Scottie Pippen is my favorite player of all time. I wore number 33 in college. Even when I play in leagues now, I still use the number 33. He set up the blueprint for the modern-day small forward, being athletic, being able to shoot the three, play D, guard 1-4. In his best years, he averaged 22 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals, and a block. And he's an all-time great. Bill Simmons has him ranked at number 24 all-time. And Simmons feels Pippen's legacy may be kind of underrated. But this gets me to the angle of why he would make those comments in regard to LeBron James being better than Michael Jordan, which he detracted from. I think Pippen feels like he may be underrated. So if he says, you know what, yeah, LeBron James, right now, he can be better than Michael Jordan, just look at what he can do, I think he wants to make himself be rated higher all time. And people are going to say, wow, you know, maybe Scottie wasn't overrated, or maybe he was deserving of the Dream Team or the Top 50. Maybe we should put Scottie in the Top 10. So I think he had a side angle in saying that. And at the end of the day, I agree with y'all. I agree with everyone on here that Pippen definitely was tripping. And with that, I'll pass it to James Williams.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I know that's your man. And as soon as I heard it, I was like, oh, man, what's Kill going to say? But this is an interesting pass the rock, because I guess we all were so pissed that guess what I want to talk about? What's up, Woven World? This is Jimmy, a.k.a. The Blueprint, a.k.a. you want to hit, give me an hour plus a pen and a pad. And I have a few words about the repugnant comments made by Scottie Maurice Pippen. First off, I've always defended Scottie against Jordan stands who feel as though Mike had no help and Scottie wasn't a prominent part in the Bulls' success of the 90s. I honestly believe that Scottie is the greatest wing defender that I've ever seen. Now, with that being said, the comments Scotty made saying LeBron may be the greatest player ever, those are egregious, and honestly, it's unfair to LeBron. LeBron has more physical talent than any player I've ever seen in my life, with the exception of Shep from above the rim, but the GOAT he is not. I understand casual fans are prisoners of the moment, but to hear Pippen make these comments, they kind of enrage me. When I first heard them, I thought, okay, Scotty must have been high on that salvia, and he wasn't speaking with a clear head. Pause. Then Scotty makes a comment saying he played the game and we should keep watching and cheering. Okay, so now you want to use the lame excuse that you played as if that makes your opinion fact. FOH, Scotty. At this point, I thought Scotty should be banned from Chicago. I wanted Alderman Gibbons to do something. Alderman Gibbons should have did something to Scotty in Chicago. I thought Scotty should have been stuck with a dose of sodium pentothal or that his personal information be put on WikiLeaks. Okay, maybe that's harsh, but he should at least have to give back one of the 6 rings that Jordan helped him get. Give Mike back one of the rings, you ungrateful prick. Now, before my Twitter gets flooded from the LeBron fans, I just want to say that LeBron hasn't won anything yet. And even when he does, the mental toughness it takes to win multiple titles is what separates the great players from the championship players. Let's see first if LeBron can develop that mental toughness before we compare him to someone on the level of Michael Jordan, a.k.a. Fed. And for those who don't know, that's the hoop earring dude. One day, LeBron may be the greatest, but guess what? Not yet. I understand that Scotty wants more credit, so if he brings Jordan down a level, it makes him look more important. Here's the problem. You're starting to look like a jealous moron, Scotty. Now, since the basketball world called you crazy, you changed your mind, and now Jordan's the greatest. You retract. FOH to that, too. So now you look like a cowardly jealous moron. Like a cowardly jealous moron, Scotty. As a matter of fact, I think I'm done talking about Pippen because at the end of the day, it was his opinion, and no matter how stupid it was his opinion. Here's my problem with Scotty now. If you really feel this way, stick to your guns and don't back down because of public opinion. Being a coward is worse than being high on salvia. No matter how hard you try, listen, Scotty, no matter how hard you try, you will always be Robin, G Money, Garfunkel, Goose from Top Gun, Pedro Sanchez from Napoleon Dynamite, Turtle from Entourage, Robin Quivers from The Stern Show, Ron Weasley from Harry Potter, Ed Norton, Samwise from Lord of the Rings, George Costanza, or Ed McMahon and Johnny Carson. Or, as a matter of fact, you get the point by now. Scotty, no matter what you do, you will always be a sidekick. I am nice. And with that, I'm going to pass the rock to my homie PJ.
Yo, I've never heard a rundown of number twos in my life, but I completely concur. And to keep it consistent with the team, Scotty Maurice Pippen, on what have you bumped your slanted, Dig Dug-looking, accordion-shaped head? You down there in Miami with some tight pink pants on, drinking the Kool-Aid, chucking and jiving to the tunes of the Heatles because you're bored. You're mad that your wife has a dry and visually demoralizing reality show. Even if we just compare the first 8 years of who you call the lead mascara and who you call the greatest of all time. And Michael Jordan's first 8 years, he comprised 2 NBA titles, 3 MVPs, 6 scoring titles, and a Defensive Player of the Year award. LeBron's first 8 years, he's working very close and could possibly get his 1 NBA title. He has 2 MVPs, only 1 scoring title, and has never been Defensive Player of the Year. And I beg you, ugly Scotty, take a look at Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's numbers over his first 8 seasons. So stop talking stupid and talking out your ass. I only took it easy on you this time because you're killed, homie. But if you continue with these blasphemous statements, like the Prince of Zamunda once told a peasy-bearded Samuel L. Jackson, I will be forced to thrash you. And with that, I do a Scottie Pippen-esque come down on the break, bang on this Patrick Ewing-looking dude, throw him down in the air, stand over him and fart, step away, look up at the lights, and get uglier and uglier and uglier and uglier.
And the crowd goes wild.
Calm down.
guys want to get in touch with us, you can check out our website at warroomsports.com. Sign up for the War Report, our weekly newsletter, right from our homepage. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. If you'd like to send an email to one of the hosts personally, all of our individual email addresses are also on that page. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/warroomsports. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/warroomsports. Subscribe to and friend our YouTube channel at warroomsportstv.com. For access to all of our media content in one place, anywhere, anytime, download the War Room Sports mobile app on your Android or Apple device. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, follow us, friend us, and favorite us to make The War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates and reminders about the show. Speaking of blogs, check out ours, All's Fair in Sports and War, on the blog tab of our website. Please subscribe to our iTunes podcast so that you can listen to the show at any time on your own device. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak with the host, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand. And who knows, the War Room professors just might call on you. And with
Yo,
that,
Austin. Man. Austin, what's good, homie?
Oh, man.
Hey, real quick, y'all, before y'all get into that HOF, I'm out, so y'all brothers have a good show. And I want to give a shout-out to my man Jonathan Cox in the chat room. We went at it all morning about Ricky Rubio, and he said in the chat room that Scottie Pippen needed some cranberry juice that day because it had to be that time of the month. So I'm going to holler at y'all.
Shout out to Jonathan.
Later,
hey, Dad, send me a check or something. We want to know who what you think about this HOF. Are you saying HOF or are you saying FOH? All
right, cool.
Good point.
All right,
so Austin, take it over. It's your chance.
Oh, man, this is all me. HOF or FOH is our segment where we take a specific player or players or team and we say HOF, Hall of Fame, or funk out of here. No entry. Denied, funds on hold. With that, I've chosen two, not one, but two athletes that I need to get my brother's opinion on, and I'd also like you, the listeners and our audience, to answer this on Facebook, on Twitter, in the chat room. Give us your thoughts. Give us your opinion because we need to know. And so with that, drum roll, no further ado, the athlete is Penny Hardaway. Anthony Hardaway. Does he
now
get into the Hall of Fame?
Ooh. Are you talking about Anthony Penny Hardaway?
Anthony
Penny
Hardaway from the University
of Memphis. I'll go first. I'll start it off, Austin. And I want to say FOH. He's not getting in no Hall of Fame that I'm a part of. Not that I'm a part of the Hall of Fame, but any Hall of Fame that I had to vote for, he wouldn't get in. I put Little Penny in before I put Penny in.
See, that's the thing about Penny, man. Like, he put together a couple good years, but he could never stay healthy, and he could never, like, be consistent with his. So, I honestly would have to say FOH, too. Like, he just doesn't have the body of work to get into the Hall
of Fame. Longevity weak. He has no longevity.
Yeah, he don't have longevity. That's what did Penny in, because when you think about it, Penny, there was so many high expectations for Penny, and he never really lived up to them, Jones, man. He never really did. What would you think, B. Austin? You got him in there?
No, phone's on hold.
Hey, yo. I got a quick phone's on hold, too. Penny's not in my book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Penny was nice at Memphis. He was nice in Memphis back in the
now,
day.
Now, it is the Basketball Hall of Fame, so we do have to consider his Memphis career.
Still, FOA.
Yeah, he played, what, 1 year? What, he played 2 years?
Like two or three. Two or three years.
Okay.
Two or three years at Memphis. He didn't take them anywhere,
okay,
though.
And then
yeah,
real quick,
real quick, I had another candidate, since we went through Penny real quick and he got SHIT'd upon. Priest Holmes. Hall of Fame.
Dang.
Wow.
He's been put up to the gridiron on us.
Priest Holmes is the greatest fantasy running back ever, yo.
Yeah. I would say Priest Holmes' career, honestly, is kind of like Penny's, like, except Penny, he was dominant in the first part of his career, then a knee injuries took him out. And then Priest Holmes was kind of like a backup for about a few years, and then probably about 5 years. Then all of a sudden he got to Kansas City, and he started lighting the world on fire for about 3 years. Then he just fell off. So not having the Jeopardy,
well, hold on, though.
I'd say Priest Holmes.
He doesn't have the Jeopardy, but Priest Holmes, like his, I think, I don't know, that's tough because at those years when he was dominant, he was way dominant. He was like, yo, 20 touchdowns.
From 2001 to 2004 or 2003, well, 3 years, like you said, Killing Jim, like 3 years, he was a monster. Like that. I mean, now, granted, he has a 10-year career if you include his years in Baltimore. So he had three dominant years. And then,
yo, but those 3 years, when you average it in with the rest of his career, he's still better than
him. Yeah, like his yards from scrimmage, just all together, rushing, receiving. I mean, he was like, He was serious.
Oh, that's a tougher one, Austin. That's a good one. To me, that's tougher than Penny. Penny is a straight FOH. Now, you talk about Priest Holmes. That's, like Hill said, it's similar to Penny because of the lack of longevity, but he was so dominant over that time span. I think he was more dominant in football than Penny was in basketball. That's my opinion.
Yo, in 2003,
so
he had 27 touchdowns.
Let me give y'all the stats so I'll make it you know, a little even a little more difficult for you. 5'9", 213, came out of Texas in 1997, three-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro. I think he finished his career with 8,172 yards. Now, I'm going to put that in perspective. That's his rushing yards. I'm going to put that in perspective. Earl Campbell's in the Hall with 7,900, I believe.
How many Gale Sayers had?
Over how many years?
I'm not sure. Earl played like eight.
But that's the thing. Even if you like look at the yardage, like even if you say he didn't play that long, when you put his stats together, his years of being dominant was so dominant that it like evens out in a sense. It's kind of crazy. Like he dominated for years.
Yeah. Well, I'll give him a little bit more perspective. His career, which is important to me. His career yards per attempt is 4.6. That's dominant.
Mm.
He's actually got four 1,000-yard seasons. He had one in Baltimore where he rushed for 1,008 yards on 233 attempts, 4.3 yards a carry. Then he had that year in Kansas City in 2001 where he went bonkers for 1,500 yards on 327 attempts, with 4.8 yards a carry.
Ooh.
Then he had another year. The next year he came back with 16-15, 21 touchdowns, 5.2 yards a carry. Then 03, he had 14-20, 27 touchdowns rushing.
Yeah.
4.4 yards a carry.
Yo, 27 touchdowns?
He got injured. 2004, he got injured, but it was still a dominant year because he had 892 yards in eight games, 4.6 yards a carry, and he was averaging 111 yards a game in 2004 when he got injured.
I'll let somebody else go first because I'm really on the fence on this one, yo.
I would say yeah, because I'm looking at his body of work, and yeah, I think in 05, what, didn't he get hurt in 05? He played seven games, and then 07, he played six games. I mean, he played four games.
He played eight games in 04, seven in 05.
Right.
And then he didn't even play
in 06, and then in 07 he had four. So, I mean, if you consider the years where he actually played, I mean, you knock about three of them off. You knock about three of those, like, just stagnant years off because he wasn't even healthy. And then if you look at the years where he played at least more than half of a season, half to more than a half of a season, his numbers are serious. So I'm going to go ahead and Brad has convinced me with that bio he just did on him. And I would say I'm going to give him a nod.
I convinced myself. I had him as SOA.
He was on the fence for me, but
dominance. There was a good one.
I think I'm gonna do a Doc Bay right now. I'm gonna say yes, but he's gonna be like a fifth ballot.
He had three separate seasons with over 2,000 yards from scrimmage.
Yo, but those seasons were so dominant. It's like, yo.
Yeah, insane.
It was so dominant that you forget it. This cat got, yo, I mean, I can tell you one thing. He's going to the Fantasy Football Hall of Fame because that's the most dominant fantasy player
he's
I've ever
seen.
He's going
to the video game Hall of Fame. He was dangerous. Think about how dangerous Priest used to be in open space, though. Think about how dangerous he was just on a screen
pass. Well, one more. Doc Bay, what you got to say about this?
For Holmes, I still say no. But he'll probably get in, you know, after a while. Because even, I mean, those 3 years were 3 years, but we've had a lot of players that have come through that have dominated for a year or two or three that don't make it, or they get in after a while.
This is why I put him in, because I'm going to actually throw those 3 years out, and I'm going to consider three things. First was the season in Baltimore in 98. He dominated with 233 carries, 1,000 yards on 4.3 in carries, and he had seven touchdowns that year. That's a dominant year for only 13 starts. That's not dominant, but it's a quality year. And then I'm going to go to 2004, where he only played 8 games, and in 8 games, he was averaging 111 yards rushing in those 8 games. So you really could say he dominated that season for the games he played. He led the league in yards per game.
Yo, Dev's on the line. I think you want to weigh in on these two. Hold on. What's up, Doc?
Man, Penny Hardaway? Hell no.
How about Priest Holmes?
FOH to Penny Hardaway. Priest Holmes, that's a harder call because he did dominate over, like, 3 good seasons. But I'm going to have to say a slight FOH just because he didn't do it long enough. So that's my input. I'm out.
No doubt. All right. All right. So
the word
Penny,
from the street.
He called it from the street. So for Penny, everybody says FOH. So
yeah.
Penny, if you're listening, FOH. But Priest, it sounds like it's 3-2. So Priest is going to make it to the War Room Hall of Fame. We got to start our own Hall of Fame.
We're putting him in the Hall.
Yeah, I'm going to put him in.
Well, listeners, family, War Room, Stans, Lemons, all y'all, we need y'all to vote on this, man. Give us the FOH or the HOF.
And if anybody wants to take up a Penny Hardaway, let us know too, because on this side he gets no love.
So they probably laid in 98.
Y'all trying to say that Nick Anderson? Y'all trying to say Nick Anderson was better than Penny?
Nah, come on, cuz.
But Nick Anderson ain't even in.
Anderson stole the farm. But that's
yeah,
what they know. Let's move on, PJ. You got some stories you want to talk about, good brother?
Yeah. I'm gonna get into this. Kill, did you want to weigh in real quick?
I was going to say with Priest Holmes, he did throw an interception in 1998. Not that it has anything to do with anything, but
he threw an interception. That sounds like it. Probably one of them Andy Reid type plays. Got him out there throwing the rock off a toss.
Am I weird? Am I weird because I remember that game? I remember that pick.
Yo, I don't. Let me get into these topics, y'all. Let's get into some hot topics. We're going to kick it off with auto racing this week. There were actually two crazy finishes in the Indy 500 and in NASCAR. In the Indy 500, rookie J.R. Hildebrand was in the lead of the Indy 500, and he crashed into the wall on the final turn and basically slid into a second-place finish. So that's crazy. And then in NASCAR, Dale Earnhardt Jr., had the lead in the Coca-Cola 600 and ran out of gas in the final turn and lost the race. Now, I ain't going front and tell you that I'm the biggest car racing fan, but I know that if I'm in a race and I'm doing laps for like an hour or two, right, to broker for position and just, you know, get into a good point that in this home stretch I can, like, make a run for the damn finish line. And I run out of gas or I crash, yo, I'm straight salty. And I don't even understand how you run out of gas. Now, the pit crew, to me, your main consideration should be the tires, gas, and, like, your engine. So all those should be.
They probably had some of that cheap-ass Valero gas.
Yeah,
yo,
man.
I
I actually spent some time way down in southern Maryland where they hunt raccoons and they eat turtle meat and they watch NASCAR and IndyCar. And I gained some insight on the sport. And it's actually really, just like baseball, there's a lot more strategy in racing than mm-hmm. we casual fans think of. When you pit, you have to be cognizant of almost every other car out there on the track to understand what their pit strategy is going to be, because you can go in the lead and you can come back out on the track down a lap. So you have to, a lot of times guys will try and stretch their gas out by doing what's called drafting, which is getting on the tail of a lead car, because the drag coefficient is much less behind Damn. Somebody that's cutting the wind for you. But if you're not dragging and you're actually in the lead, then what you're doing is you're getting all of that drag, you're facing that wind, and you're actually burning more gas. So there's a fine line to walk. If you're going to lead in a race, you've got to get so far ahead that you can pit and still make up time. And then also your pit crew has to be watching what everybody else is doing and understanding what their tires look like, what their gas looks like, and what their pit strategy is going to be.
Yo,
yeah,
man.
No, no. See, that makes more sense
sort of,
now.
Sort of like, real quick, PJ, sort of like Lamont once said, Lamont Wilson, who's a contributor on our Facebook page, he once said that NASCAR is like playing chess at 200 miles an hour. There's a lot going on. But with that being said, it's still kind of embarrassing to run out of gas at the final turn.
Straight up. But hold up. In the final,
that
in
his,
the home stretch, though.
I feel bad for Dale Earnhardt Jr. because he's actually not a bad driver. He's actually probably in the top 10, top 15 in the world.
Yeah, but that's number three Sunday,
huge,
dog.
He has such huge shoes to fill because his dad was like that Michael Jordan of NASCAR.
Right.
So every little thing that he does like this, just like you say, Jimmy, that's embarrassing to the Earnhardt name.
Right. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's crazy because, like you said, he's junior, and I know his pop, being a casual fan, I heard that name for, like, my entire life, the Earnhardts Association.
Yeah, his pop was that dude. Let's move on.
All black car, and had his six shooting pistols in the shooting at your tires.
Yeah.
But go ahead,
crazy.
Next story,
but, Joe, the Stanley Cup final started yesterday. Vancouver Canucks against the Boston Bruins. And then the Canucks actually won that game, 1-0. Rafi Torres scored a game-winning goal with 18.5 seconds left in the game. It was like a close defensive grind-out type of game. But, yo, he scored that, John, with 18 seconds left. And it was like, you know, obviously it was the game-winning goal. So do you guys have any predictions for this series? I mean, go ahead, John.
I think Vancouver has the best record in the NHL, if I'm not mistaken. But I'm not rooting for Boston. Like, yo, let Vancouver win anyway. Like, that's all. I don't want Boston to win nothing, yo. Boston can't win nothing.
I concur.
I hate everything Boston.
I'd like to give a shout out to the NHL for their great business plan and structure after going on their most recent lockout about 5 years ago. And it's a shame because they have this great structure in place, but they can't even get any, like, real TV networks to host their games. So it's pretty sad. But shout out to the Flyers and the NHL for their business structure.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, yeah, you figure, I mean, they're probably big in Canada. I'm sure they have a lot of franchises in Canada, but here it's just like, man, you know.
Yo, all I want to know is Wayne Gretzky.
What if they out? You said is Gretzky playing?
Yeah.
Nah. Is he playing?
Yeah.
Damn.
Is Mario Lemieux involved?
Not that we know of. Maybe.
He's involved.
But he might be involved
playing
in some way. He damn sure ain't playing. His ghost playing.
In America, since hockey is, it seems like the country is losing interest. I mean, back when Blades of Steel came out and ice hockey and all these different video games, it seemed, and with Gretzky and Lemieux, it was real popular in the Red Wings. But now, with the hockey losing interest, I wonder, just imagine, like, over the next 10 years, teams or cities in Canada will just start buying up all the defunct American franchises. Then all of a sudden, you'll have, like, more teams in Canada, United States. I wonder if that'll ever happen.
Possibly. I mean, if there's demand for it, I mean, I don't know. You see what happened in Atlanta.
I think that the economy in Canada won't really sustain that. And I say that not saying that their economy isn't strong, but look at their population versus the U.S. The U.S. is about 500 million people, including those that enter without visas. And Canada is probably about 80 million at best. So you don't have the same market for consumption and for advertising north of the border that you do here. It's kind of like, even if you look at CFL, Canadian football, they still use a strong American following to keep, you know, keep the advertising dollars rolling in, because if they just depended on Canadian market, they wouldn't survive. So it's got to be done.
You know what? Yeah, that's a good point. And I think, I know you said 80, but I think Canada's population might be closer to, actually it's like only 35 million.
Yeah,
so that's a good point.
Austin always fudging numbers, yo. He like the old wrestler Augustine Lake. Add a couple of inches on your height and all that. That's what Austin do. So let's move on to hockey, though, man. We're talking about hockey,
yo.
The Canadian, the country of Canada is mostly wilderness. Like, it's mostly unpopulated. So go ahead, brother.
That's true. If I was to say for my prediction for this series, I, like Jimmy said, I pretty much hate Boston sports-wise and any possible opportunity. So I would like to see the Canucks win, say, one game one. I like to see them win it in six, and it would be the first Stanley Cup for that franchise. So, I mean, they got a 40-year history, so I think they're due. With that, though, let's move on to the Ohio State University. As I shake my head and talk about this school and their football team, man. So Jim Tressel, good brother, he resigns over this past week, as they concurrently have initiated some investigations of Terrell Carr flipping Pryor. So first things first, y'all. Do y'all think it was a good idea for Tressel to go ahead and get his resignation on? Was it late?
Man, I think he should have been fired a while ago. I think it was egregious that he wasn't fired. But you know, your man Terrell Pryor driving a CL6 wide body the color duck ball. He over there flipping cars and whatnot. But I mean,
on
you know,
suspended
I
license.
I think more is going to come out. I think more is going to come out, and we're going to look at Tressel like all the other coaches when they bounce, because there's more about to come out. So we shall see what happens.
Yeah, I agree.
What you
want to
say, Austin?
I thought I saw Terrell Pryor on Bartram Ave out West Philly by this little Italian chop shop they had by the airport, but I'm not sure.
Oh, man. It might have been him.
Shout out to the plated whips from the 90s. The Lex
Bowen.
Oh, man. And the act.
Yeah.
And the act coupe.
And the act coupe was legendary, cuz. Yeah, the
for real.
Act coupe. But you know what's funny? They said that there's a story apparently now that there's a lawyer on behalf of the Pryor family saying that the last car
Dewey
that he
Cheatham.
Was in. Would you say?
Dewey Cheatham. He was Fred the Turner.
Yeah.
Dewey
right,
Cheatham.
Right. He said that apparently the 2007 Nissan 350Z, they do have the paperwork proving that his mom did purchase that car. So apparently that is legit, and they're working on getting his license situation straightened out. It was just like something they forgot to do or take care of. So we'll see. But like you said, Jim, it's still a lot to come out in that story. Yo.
All the boys I knew in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, with the plated whips had the paperwork right, too.
Yeah, that's true. They usually had it in somebody's name, like some random name that you never heard of before. His Jordan is mom name, so they better not have plated it and registered it
in
her name.
Got everything in my mama's name.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's more to come with that story, man. It's more to come. We'll see. In the NFL, though, the NFLPA is going to hold, as it usually does or attempts to, its own 52nd and Market bootleg-style rookie symposium. The NFLPA is going to actually conduct this instead of the actual NFL. So
I personally, and everybody listening, this is Jimmy, I personally would like to take credit for this because this came as a response to my PTR last week. Yes, the NFL was listening, where I suggested that the NFLPA should do this because if not, all of us are in trouble. Go ahead, brother, you got it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was going to say
it's not the official one.
That's what you said last week, and it's not the official one, but it's better than nothing. I mean, they still need to hold something, even if you have current players just allowing them to bounce questions off of them, you know, just being as the mentors to these guys, you know, just to help them, give them some kind of, like, initiation before they get started in this league. So, you know, I think it's a good idea.
If not, watch how much evil, which we call
do this research. Exactly. If not, then y'all want to start doing that research. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Watch how much evil,
that.
Which we call crime.
Yo.
Yo,
do this
only
research.
For my family, man. It's my uncle.
How you going to do that research? Where you going to start the research at? Do this research.
Do this research. Like, that's Sal's job. Just do the research. He going to pat him on the leg telling do this research. But anyway. But anyway, y'all, let's head over to the association that we call the NBA. Lakers hired good old Mike Brown and did not consult Kobe Bryant, apparently, on the hire. What y'all think about that? Was that a good idea? Should they have consulted Kobe? Do they need to just, like, since are they looking at Kobe as just a short-term situation? Why do you think they wouldn't consult their franchise before?
Yeah,
right.
First off, I'd like to
congratulate Jimmy Williams, as he's the only Laker fan on the program. You now have a different brand of basketball from the Lakers. The championship days are over, but Kobe is definitely going to get his scoring up because he's going to do what he wants.
He's going to be a Bill Russell player coach.
Yo, Mike Brown is the Buddy Ryan of the NBA in that he has no care, no concern, and no understanding of offensive basketball. Spacing, sets, plays. What's that? We don't need that. Get out the way.
Yo,
everybody go to the baseline.
Austin, you're disrespecting this boy ungodly, man. I ain't going to say nothing because I'm just gonna see what happens. But, yo, you straight said the boy don't have no brain at all. I listened
game.
To that back last week. He got a mean
interview
game,
interview
man.
Game. I know that. And if you listen to him talk, I was listening to him talk because he almost sounds, and, you know, all the Obama protectionists, I'm sorry, but he almost sounds like Obama sometimes when he talks, like his cadence almost as he's speaking. And it's funny because I'm like, yo, it was during the press conference, and I'm listening to him, and I'm like, yo, this dude sounds like he's giving a speech, an inaugural speech or something. And that's probably how he was during the interview. That one.
My
Lakers
man probably make a hell of
over.
A car salesman, cause he probably be a nice car salesman. My man know how to sell, cause.
Yes, we can. Be like that.
hopefully they get the mutts to play some defense, cause the Lakers don't play no defense.
Kill, were you going to weigh in?
I think it was a bad move by the Lakers. I figured they might as well stuck with Shaw because Mike Brown has proven that, you know, he can get his team to play defense. But when it comes to, I think, leading the star player and or maybe even correcting or even just basically coaching the star player, he didn't do too well with that with LeBron his years there. And he's going to probably let Kobe and whoever else, Artest, do whatever they want in terms of not keeping them accountable. Because I know we all saw, even when they went to, go ahead.
I was actually rooting for Rick Adelman because I think Brian Shaw was too close. Him and Kobe have been friends since Kobe was a teenager. So it's like, I didn't know, like, what he would be able to say to Kobe as well. Like, I thought that if Shaw got the job, that Kobe would have been running the team as well. So I was actually personally rooting for Rick Adelman to get the job because he's a veteran coach, has the experience, and he's won everywhere he's been.
That's a good point. Now, interesting thing with Shaw, like I know they've had they've known each other for a while, but I kind of looked at Shaw being there as like, well, he's known Kobe since he was a kid, so he's always looked, I guess, down on Kobe, like, yo, you're my young boy. Yo, you're my young boy. I mean, I think he would watch him while his pop would probably pop and mom go out. So he probably used to babysit Kobe sometimes. So he probably looks at Kobe like, yo, Kobe, yo, go sit down. You understand? Now, would he do that? I don't know. But that's kind of my speculation. But Adelman would have been a good hire. But with one thing I was gonna say about Brown is, you know, there have been rumblings. If you go over to hoopshype.com, there have been rumblings about, you know, Brown being aloof on offense and, you know, him just kind of not being in the huddle, and the assistant coaches and LeBron are like setting up the plays. He's just kind of like, all right, guys. You know, even in the finals, I was gonna say when they lost to the Spurs. If y'all remember, even though they probably weren't supposed to get to the finals that year.
I saw an East Coast finals game where the coach did not enter the huddle.
Yeah.
He was getting some hot dogs and popcorn. The concession bowl was over there to his left.
But, Joe, if y'all notice how LeBron, offensively, they kept having LeBron try to take Bruce Bowen, who's a great on-ball defender, one-on-one, and then getting forced into double teams and having to shoot off-balance jumpers, where I'm like, Brown, run some plays for LeBron to start off on the block. He is bigger than Bruce Bowen. Then he can either shoot right over Bruce Bowen, jump hook, left hand, right hand, off the glass, bank shot, some up and unders, or if they double, LeBron's a good passer. They can pass it out.
What LeBron are you talking about? LeBron, I know he got pushed out of the post by the Puerto Rican AI a couple of games ago. Or the last
game. You talking about Barrera?
Barrera pushed LeBron out the post. LeBron's post game is egregious. You got to post out Barrera, and Barrera pushed him out the lane.
Logic would make you think that what Kill said would make complete basketball sense. Like, he's physically bigger than Bruce Bowen. He's got him by like 3 inches in height. He should be able to take him on the block. He probably outweighs him by like 40 to 50 pounds. He should have been able to take him on the block, do something, and work off of that. Like, whether it's a move, whether it's doing something to draw a double and passing out of it, whatever, he should have been able to create from the block, seriously. But, I mean, you're right, Jimmy. I mean, that LeBron is going to get it on the block and run out to
the
three-point line.
Years later, he still can't create from the block as great as he is.
He get it, yeah.
You're right.
At any rate, what's the next story, good
brother? The next thing here, man, is interesting. The big Aristotle, the big Shamrock, Shaq Fu, retired yesterday, taking all the basket. It's funny how big the Shaq story got compared to the final story. And I feel like as soon as the news came out that Shaq was retiring, like, that became the big story in basketball. So I ask you, brothers, where does Shaq Fizu rank with the all-time centers? Because to me, this is a good topic.
Before we jump into this, PJ, let me say one thing before we jump into this. I got one thing that I got to bring up real quick.
Wait, yeah.
Come on, man. Yo,
you can't
Shaq
stop
Rock
it.
With Big Nas and Jay.
Come
but
on,
in terms
man.
Of basketball, I definitely have Shaq as a top five center of all time. I'll give you my list in no particular order. Russell, Wilt, Kareem, of course. Akeem the Dream and Shaquille O'Neal. Those are my top five centers of all time. I think Shaq would be either four or five in that list. And I had a tough time making that list because I want to put Moses there, but I think Shaq was more dominant than Moses. So I got Shaq in the top five in terms of centers of all time.
And I think that is kind of almost like the Mount Rushmore of centers. Just like you said, I think from what I've heard since this question has been out there since his retirement, that's pretty much the consensus, the majority, I would say, in terms of the five. And the question is, where do you rank them? I mean, it's really hard to rank all of them. I mean, if I had to do it off the top, like how I'm feeling today, which could change next month, I would say Wilt, then Kareem, then Bill Russell, then the Dream, just because of his defense, his rebounding, and that thing over Shaq. But then Shaq would be five. And like you said, I would want to put Moses in there, but it's hard to take any of those five off of that list and put Moses above.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
What
you guys got to say about this?
Yo, I'm going to say that Shaq, it's kind of, he should have went down as number one. Like, it's kind of sad that he's four and five on most people's lists, given the athletic talent, or as Barkley would say, athletic talent that he was blessed with. So, I mean, he's a great center, no doubt, but I think a lot of us on here felt as though if he would have put more work on his game and, you know, stayed in shape longer, even as dominant as he was, he could have even been better to the point where it couldn't have been an argument. Like, it could have been, okay, Mike, and then
yeah,
Jack.
If he did that, we wouldn't have got the song with Biggie, though. He had other things to do, man. Yo,
true. What's your jam?
Exactly. I never knew that Shaq never led the NBA in rebounding. And it's funny because of how dominant he was, especially in, like, 2000, which was one of his best years. He never, ever led the league in rebounding, which is interesting to me, is, you know, for somebody his size who plays that much around the rim.
He played at a time when Dennis Rodman was grabbing damn near every board at every game every night.
Rodman
was grabbing boards in different cities.
He was. Hey, Austin, I know you're not the hugest Shaq supporter in the world.
I definitely got to hear what Austin is saying.
I can call you a hater, but I know you ain't the biggest Shaq, supporter in the world. So where would you put him amongst the all-time greatest?
Hey, hold up. B, Austin, hey, fellas, I got to sign off, but I'm a listen, and I'd like to hear what B, Austin has to say, but I'm going to sign off. Peace out to War Room family. All right.
Yes, sir.
All right, Kill. Later, brother. Take it easy.
All right. Yo, I think that y'all are doing my man Moses a disservice.
I knew it. Come on, man.
I got Kareem. I got Wilt, and I'm still questioning whether Wilt ever really existed. Sasquatch.
Yo.
I got the Nigerian brother.
Nightmare.
Bill Russell. And then I got Fo.
Man. So you got Moses above Shaq, huh?
Yeah.
I love Moses, don't get me wrong.
You know what weighs heavy on me about Shaq? Is because Shaq, you might say LeBron is the most talented athlete that we've ever seen, but if LeBron is number one, I put Jordan in that top five, but I put Shaq higher than Jordan. I never saw anything in my life like Shaq. Yo, Shaq was 7'12" and 45 million pounds and might have had like a 40-inch vertical when he came in the league. Yo, there's no excuse for dude not to lead the league in rebounding, because it wouldn't have been hard. And there's no excuse for him to be the poor defender that he was, because we always give Shaq the excuse of his size as to why he never showed up on the screens and why he didn't move his feet. But Shaq was more athletic than better defenders. He was more athletic than guys that.
Also, you got to figure in terms of rebounding, he was the focal point of the triangle, which took him out of position on most of the rebounds.
You're looking strictly at the Laker years. But I'm saying if you look
at the Orlando years, he put up nice amount of rebounds. When he first came in the league, he was averaging like 11 and 12 rebounds. Now, of course, he didn't leave the league because Dennis Rodman was
around
like
12.
18, 19.
You're right, he was around 12, but...
I mean, so it wasn't like he was a slouch on the board, but once he got into the triangle, that changed things.
Would you guys agree with me that the centers in the league and the big men got progressively worse over Shaq's career? Would you say that?
Yeah, I would say that. That's what I was going to say. Towards the end of the 90s, when Kareem and Patrick and David Robinson and all them guys bounced, he was playing against the likes of Vlade and them. I mean, at times.
Shaq is an all-time talent. And there's no reason why you're going against B-level and C-level talent and you don't dominate even without thinking about it. Shaq is up there with Wilt in terms of talent and ability, and played against probably as weak a competition as Wilt.
First off, let me ask you a question. What centers did Moses dominate?
Yo, Moses played for my Sixers, so let's not get involved.
Yeah.
Moses played against good centers, but I don't know about him dominating them.
Moses put up 20 and 20 one year.
Shaq got out rebounded by somebody that was the size of a perimeter player and wore his hair crazy and had herpes. Come on, man.
Yo, that's the greatest rebound in the history of the league. You can cut that out.
I agree.
Moses.
Because he wanted it that bad.
Moses would sit up there and tap the rock back to himself to keep putting up his board numbers. But at the same time, that 3-year span that Shaq had when he won MVP and he won all those titles, Moses never had a run like that. Yo, Moses never had a run like that on a video game, in real life, in high school. Shaq was the best player in the world.
I don't know, Jim. When Houston in 81, Moses averaged 31 in like 15, though.
Damn!
For the season. I mean, and then the year prior to that, he averaged 28 and 15.
Look at Shaq's averages in the finals. Moses also was
6'9", though, like 215. So he didn't have the physical. I still would have Shaq. Moses was like a hard working type of. I was exaggerating a little bit to make my point.
Why do we put Bill Russell? If that's the case, I take Moses over Bill Russell. Here's what the old heads will tell you about Bill Russell, though.
Yo, come on, man. We got to move on now.
He said Moses is better than Bill Russell, man.
But Bill Russell, he's on that Scottie Pippen right now. That's a new segment, man. All right, so basically. So Brad got Moses number like 3 basically in the all time after Kareem and then in the last watch. All right, lastly, y'all, before we wrap this up, Dwight Howard made some comments over the past week saying basically he's not going to do what Shaq did. He's not following after Shaq in the sense that Shaq left Orlando to go to LA like he's rumored to do next year. So what do you guys think about that? Is he talking trash? Do you still think he is considering making that move if it presents itself? Or is he just – because, I mean, he's making it seem like, look, I want to be the one to make everybody come to me. That's what I got from, his comments. Like, I want everybody to come here and play here. I need the support of the organization, the city.
He don't want to get on TV and have a decision and take his talents to L.A. He said, you come to me.
He wants to do an anti-LeBron type of joint. You know what I'm saying? Do you believe that? Do you think he's just talking to kill all that rap and kill all the rumors and all that stuff? Or do you really believe it?
If all that is true, why didn't he sign the contract that they supposedly had before him all season?
Yeah, maybe he waited for the CBA, even though.
Well, supposedly, CBA is involved, and he wants to see how they're going to make the help.
Listen to what I'm saying. If he would have signed a contract, the CBA would have no effect on him. If he really wants to
CBA might hurt him. You don't know what's going to happen with the CBA.
If he might have played the contract, and then you're not affected by the CBA.
But Jimmy, look at this. It has to be bigger than him. He's not looking at it just like, okay, if I sign before the CBA, I'm cool. He's trying to figure out what strategy the Orlando Magic are going to employ around the CBA to still surround him with talent.
I agree with that, but don't sit there and act as if you're going to stay there when if they're not able to get the talent based upon their salary cap, you're going to bounce anyway. Because if your plans are just staying there, okay, I'm going to sign and then do what you got to do. FOH. All right, y'all.
Well, I'm going to give them another media blast real quick just so people can, get in touch with us, and we'll continue after that. So you can check out our website at warroomsports.com. Sign up for the War Report, our weekly newsletter, right from our homepage. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. If you'd like to send an email to one of the hosts personally, all of our individual email addresses are also on that page. Join us on Facebook, facebook.com/warroomsports. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/warroomsports. Subscribe to and friend our YouTube channel at warroomsportstv.com. For access to all of our media content in one place, anywhere, anytime, download the War Room Sports mobile app on your Android or mobile device. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, follow us, friend us, and favorite us to make The War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates and reminders about the show. Speaking of blogs, check out ours, All's Fair in Sports and War, on the blog tab of our website. Please subscribe to our iTunes podcast so that you can listen to the show at any time on your own device. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak with the host, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand, and you never know. One of us War Room professors just might call on you. With that, I'm going to throw over to you, Jim.
It's a lot of Facebook chat about this whole Moses versus Shaq. And most people
say what they
Shaq. A couple people say Moses, but then as they say Moses, they say I'm biased. I'm silly. So
right. Moses to get
Shaq.
To the promised land.
Yeah, most people are saying Shaq. People are being honest, like, hold on. Jonathan Cox in our room said, look, honestly it's Shaq, but I'm a Sixers fan, so I'm just going to have to say Moses. But,
right.
I mean, that's the consensus amongst most people. But I think that Brad is on that that Pippen, considering he just said, he mentioned Moses as being better than Bill Russell.
Bill Russell.
Come on, son.
Yeah.
Come on, son. Anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's time to get into some talk about these finals.
Yeah.
Shout out to my man Curtis Lowe. Anyway, Jason Terry got the Larry O'Brien trophy tattooed on his arm. Did you guys see this?
Oh. Yo, I saw the joint, like in his inner bicep, cuz.
Yeah.
Yo,
and
he must
have
that
part
good
of
hashish.
A team building ritual to show him that you got to, you know, I guess he was practicing the secret, so to speak. He was putting it out in the universe to see what happens.
You got to visualize it. You got to speak it into being. Well,
you
got to
visualize it, but he's feeling it.
I wonder why he didn't visualize more shots going in the second half of that game.
Ooh. I mean, it could be worse because, I mean, he could have them Kobe Bryant-type tattoos because Kobe Bryant got the worst tattoos I've ever seen on an athlete. Kobe Bryant, like, his tattoos
was
done by his wife. Anyway.
It probably was, knowing her.
It probably was. Yo, I know everybody was pissed at Scotty for those comments, but did you see my man Kareem Abdul-Jabbar drop that Easter on him in the letter, and as well as Isaiah Thomas weighing in on Scotty Pippen's LeBron Jordan comments?
Yeah, now
yo,
I heard the letter. He did. I mean, it's funny. Everybody was weighing in. Those two, I heard Magic was like, yo, he bugging. He tweeted that out. Barkley said in the Barkley voice, Scotty Pippen had lost his damn mind. He's trying to get some tickets out of Miami. You know how Barkley stuff. Anyway, Scotty Pippen had lost his damn mind. But, yeah, I did hear the letter. Now, it's funny because in the letter, it seemed like Kareem was, like, talking. He was like, yo, it was kind of like focused on Wilt as, like, how you going to say Jordan is the best scorer when Wilt was averaging 50 and scored 100 in a game? And what's funny is the funny thing.
Kareem was doing what he's supposed to do. He was looking out for his generation. Like, because
that's
my problem with a lot of sports fans. Everybody is what's happening today. People forget. And it's funny because it seems like Scotty, like opened up a can that's never been there before. Like, you know, I spent a lot of time on Facebook and Twitter, and people never, like, diss Mike. Once Scotty said it, it's like he kind of made it okay to diss Mike. Now, I diss Mike all the time personally, but most of the time people, like, leave Mike alone. But
that's
Scotty,
never
like,
hear
made
nobody
it okay.
Diss Mike. Yeah,
yo,
you never hear nobody
like,
diss Mike like that. And then coming from Scotty, people are like, yo, he played with him. He don't say that?
The funny thing about dissing Mike is it's like, it's cool to diss Mike because he's an a-hole, and it's cool to diss Mike because I've never seen an athlete dress worse. And I've watched Shannon Sharp, and I've seen Deion Sanders, and I still say that no one dresses worse than the hoop earring dude. But I've never really heard folks get into his game and where the weaknesses are in his game that make him less than number one. And that includes you, Jimmy. I've never heard you say or tell me from a skill, athletic, and talent perspective, why this dude is anywhere less than number one.
And because the thing about it is, even though I did say on our show that I don't think that Mike is the greatest of all time, I said that he's two or three. So I don't think calling someone the second or third best player in your profession or at anything you do, if you sell insurance,
yeah,
I said,
that.
Yo, you're the second best insurance salesman of all time. That's not dissing you. I just said I disagree with where your ranking is. But with that being said, I've seen people now start to, like, come at Mike just because it's like Scotty made it okay in a sense. Kareem was, like, looking out for his generation because people act as though basketball didn't start until Mike started playing. Or I've heard the comment that basketball is different once Magic came in play. I mean,
Magic Bird,
you
Isaiah.
Can knock. See, really? The thing is, here's the thing. People knock the players of the past, saying they didn't play when there was a lot of athletes and yada, yada, yada. But it's all relative because they also didn't play at a time where they had private jets, personal trainers, personal chefs. Yo, these dudes wasn't really making that much money. Give Wilt a nutritionist and a personal chef and a trainer and let him have free reign in the weight room.
Yo.
And Wilt was already benching 500 and running the 40 in 3.3 seconds.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yo,
so to me,
no,
he was doing that.
Yo, damn that. Give Wilt basketball without having to Smeagol three Jones a night.
I know, right?
Give
Wilt a condom.
Yo, not only was Wilt getting a bunch of insides, but it's like he also didn't have like free reign in the weight room and all these things that these players currently have. So to me, it's all relative. So people disrespect,
right.
And Kareem is looking out
for
the previous generation.
It's funny because it's hard. I will admit, though, it's tough if you haven't seen somebody. But I think if you like, so we haven't seen Bill Russell. I haven't seen Wilt play. But I'm looking at the stats of Wilt, and I'm like, yo, if this was really a human that put together a stat sheet, like,
no, he's not
like
real.
Somebody that breathed, and that bled blood and breathed oxygen, put together stats like, he had 57 rebounds against Bill Russell in one game.
Yo, let me explain something to
you. Who does that,
though? You know how in Men in Black, like, it was like people
rebounds.
That looked like they were human, but they really weren't human?
Yeah.
Yo, I think Wilt was one of them. Because,
yo, the old head said that they didn't, obviously, you know, they didn't count blocks a lot for a majority of his career. But they said, old heads were saying he would average like 10, 12 to 15 blocks easy. It was just like normal.
Yo,
it wasn't a big deal because they didn't keep that stat. But he was,
yo,
I mean,
so
I would imagine that just because of the fact that of the other numbers that he put up, how would he not block shots? He was obviously getting the shot off easily.
I'm going to keep it 100. I went in and researched Wilt. And specifically Wilt versus Russell. And the way that Wilt used to physically abuse Russell, I can't say that Russell is that close to Wilt because it's like Jordan versus John Starks. And not only do I see it in the numbers, though, PJ, I hear it from the old heads. Old heads are like, Bill Russell. Yo, Wilt used to do what he wanted when he wanted against him. Yo, clear out. Let me run the point. Let me pull Russell out.
My bottom line is this. When it comes to talking about Wilt scored 100 points in a game. Now, I personally went out to Mallory by myself when nobody was there early in the morning. I couldn't score 100 points and there was nobody in the court with me.
I tried to score 89.
I scored 100 points on my shadow, cuz.
I tried to score 89 on my shadow and couldn't.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Come on, cuz. But in terms of what Isaiah said sort of like what I'm saying. Like, LeBron has, like, you know, he has the not the ability to be, so to speak, but it's like he has that pedigree. LeBron is a physical freak of nature. But he has to put it together, give him time. I think it's kind of unfair to LeBron to say some of the things that he said.
Yeah.
This dude ain't won one
championship. I think it's a testament to LeBron's ability that he's able to dominate at such a high level with so many holes in his game. Because I see holes all in his game, and he still is able to dominate these cats out here. And the other thing about comparing the generations, you know, you touched on some of the things, but not only does this generation's players have the benefit of the greatest, you know, foods and trainers and all of those things that come to support them, they also play a different brand, which is actually a little less physical than they did back in the day. If you had the opportunity to hand check and punch dudes in the waist area as they dribbled, yo, I don't know if a lot of these dudes have the skill to be able to handle the rock and get to where they need to get to with somebody hanging on them or hand-checking them. So the skill level is a little lower.
They used to get mauled. Because
listen, check it out. They don't even play the same type of with the same type of aggression, and it's not as physical as they used to be in the early to mid '90s. We remember watching when you could actually hand check and just lean on somebody. Like your hand check, you could just lean on them. Like say you were checking a point guard, you could put your forearm and you dig your elbow up into the kidney, and then lay your forearm around the rib cage and just sit there. Like that's what we used to do with Magic. Like just get all up on him and just lean on him and try to push him.
Ruben Patterson didn't get old. They just said, listen, we're going in a different direction and your services are no longer needed here.
And it was crazy. First of all, another thing is, like, if you look at it, Isaiah weighed in. Isaiah, to me, is one of the most underrated because you never hear his name mentioned. Well, you talking top 10, 20, nobody. Because, yo, the one thing I respect about Isaiah is when they did that top 50 players of all time, yo, y'all cats realize Isaiah was the only player on the stage without a teammate. That's crazy.
Was he?
Yeah.
I didn't even realize that.
We know that he had a bomb
Zeke,
squad.
Zeke was nice.
He was.
To me.
He had Joe Dumars, though, now. You know, he had Joe.
Stop it. Joe Dumars is the most overrated player in the history of professional sports outside of Brett Favre. Yo, but to me, when I hear cats like Kareem and Isaiah and Magic and Barkley, like, you know, their words hold more weight than Scottie's, right? You know,
Scotty sounds like it may have come from a place of, like somebody alluded to earlier, of, like, a little jealousy, a little hatred, a little frustration.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Scotty and Barkley didn't even get along well. I remember when Scotty told – I remember there was –
Yo,
some
yeah, he
shit
on him. That's why Mike
said
you'll never win.
Scotty told Barkley that Michael Jordan told him not to go to Houston with and play with him because Barkley is lazy and they're not going to win. And Scotty and Barkley went through it a little bit, and then Scotty told him, like, yo, Mike told me not to even come here and play with you. So they had a little beef back in the day. Like,
I remember that.
You remember that? Yeah. So I think Scotty's thing is coming from a little bit of, like, you know, even Kill said it, you know, might move him up a little bit more. I don't know where that, you know what I'm saying? I'm just like, I don't know if that
Scotty,
even came from a natural place. He probably really believes Mike is still, you know, the greatest player, but he's still a little salty.
Yeah, he's a noodle, man. Now I think about that. He been did that. I mean, Mike told him that in confidence. He went out and, like, you know, that's what Mike told me.
And he told Chuck. He told Barkley.
Come on,
hey, real quick. Let me weigh back in on this. Sorry, I'm checking back in.
Yeah,
Yo, I'm not even taking up. And this is what I like to prove to people on our thread, how you can, even your favorite player, people know he's my favorite player, but I can be so objective to understand that when we look at the historical perspective of Scottie Pippen, he dominated on the floor for what he can do, but he was not clutch. In pressure situations, sometimes he folded, like against the Pistons. Even with his own coach, when his coach didn't have enough confidence in him to take the last shot, so once again, as a mental midget, he said, well, I'm not going in the game. And then Kukoc just game-winning shot in game four versus the Knicks when Mike retired. So as we can see, when it comes to these mental situations and social situations, Scotty just doesn't handle things well. And this is, you know, this has been going on for 20 years now. So that's all I got to say. I'm out.
Yo, and Kill, I agree with you because y'all know that, like, my favorite player of all time is Magic Johnson, and I can admit that he has a speech impediment. And his sartorial game is weak, too, because the way that the shirts that we'll be wearing looks like he's going on a picnic. So I understand.
And I even once heard you admit that he never played a lick of defense. So you definitely are objective.
You're not going to get me to say that on the air, though, champ. I'm going to let you know that right now.
Yo, any kiss, he kissed Isaiah on the lips.
Yo.
Davey's just
Mike
happy.
Mike wear jeans with rips on around the kneecap, so.
Yo, Mike be dressing like a Compton Howdy Doody, man. Mike is just awesome.
Yo,
like,
I'm tell you why Mike
Howdy Doody from the hood. That joker look like Howdy Doody from the hood, because I ain't never seen nothing like that.
Here's why Magic dress game is trash, too. But Magic don't let us know.
It ain't like Mike's. It is not like Mike's. I'm objective. I believe Michael Jordan is the god of basketball, but his sartorial game is beyond. Yo, there's no one that dresses worse than Mike, yo. I'm convinced.
Yo, but you're on the clothing line, cuz.
Yo, and his clothes are hot, but he doesn't wear them, though. And the ones that he does wear are the weak ones. Yo, he had that light blue Carolina blue suit on, and he looked like a Smurf.
Yo, Mike is horrible, cuz. Yo, ever since he got divorced from his wife, he started, ill, man. Ever since that divorce, man, he was done.
Yo,
he started messing
with
that little young
Bolshevik, what's up with them Bolshevik Russian captain hats that he be putting on like part of the Russian Revolution? And the stovepipe. Yo,
yo, back in the day, Mike used to rock the Booger Green suits to the press conference, though. Mike dress game been horrible, cuz.
David Falk had him straight for a minute. David's
man,
out of
not
light
all the time. Mike used to wear some loud suits, cuz. Mike, yo.
But
yo,
you, now, though, you see his jeans?
He
wears
jowls
with
Mike. He trying to dress like a young boy. Now it's worse.
Yo, but now he wears jeans with, like, lampshades on the knees. And, like, on the back, it'd be like a skirt. Straight up. It'd be like, come on, man.
Your man MJ had on some used jeans, cuz. Yo, anyway.
Some major. Right, no, man. The nigga had on Major Damage.
Yo,
he still wants to be a youngster, so it's like, he's like, dang, what was hot in the 90s? Let me get some used. Let me get some cross colors, some Carl Canal.
He just came home. He's just like he got locked up with Al, bro, and he just came home.
Mike dressed like he just came home. Yo, let's get into the finals, though, yo, because y'all got me dying over here. Yo, the first game, the Heat won. They beat the Mavericks 1-0. What is your guys' opinion of the game? Like, some people I've actually heard say the series over, which is retarded to me. I shouldn't say it. It's mentally handicapped to me. Shout out to all my mentally handicapped people out there. But, yo, what are you guys' opinions of the series?
They're,
I mean, is it over?
I wouldn't say it's over. There's some things that the Mavs have to do, though. Like, I mean, for instance, like, they got to improve the rebounding. They got outscored on their bench. They allowed the Heat to hit 11 three-pointers and shoot more and make more three-pointers than them. They got 4 rebounds out of Tyson Chandler. I mean, when they went to the zone, it seemed. First of all, let's start off with the game. Yo, the first quarter was atrocious. It was like 12-13 at the end of the first quarter, and then even in the first half, I feel like when they went to the zone, I'm talking about the Mavs now. It seemed to kind of create some issues for Miami in terms of the scoring, but they couldn't read. They got out rebound. Like the rebounding was just not there. Like you don't have your same blockout assignments when you're in zone versus when you're a man-to-man because your body's not on you for guys down low in the paint. So, I mean, I think
Dirk is 7 foot and averages 1 rebound for every foot.
It's just, I don't think it's – I know one thing. The Heat guard the perimeter very well, right? So, I mean, that's going to be a problem because that's where the majority – obviously, that's where the majority of the Mavs scoring comes from. It's tough when you got 1 superstar versus 3. I mean, 2.5, however you want to say it, but, you know, some people would say 3. It's just tough to me. I'm looking at the game, and I'm like, yo, they can mix it up. The Heat just can come at you more ways.
Do you think Udonis has somebody to play good defense?
I think he played as big a role as Kendrick Perkins does.
I
think when Udonis was on Dirk for a couple plays he was on him, he did a good job. And he wasn't there when they played them in the regular season. But B. Austin, for those who are listening for the first time, doesn't like role players. So
I think they're role players. They do play a part. I mean, you do need role players. I mean, look at the Bulls. I mean, they had a bunch. They had Scotty and Mike and role players. You know, so, I mean, they do make things.
Scotty was a role player.
Anyway.
I mean, yeah, he's a good role player.
He knew his role. Yo, but my thing is
obviously he don't. He's mad at that role. That's why he's coming out with his last segment.
How about that? But yo, in terms of game one, you're right. The Heat, in the words of Barkley, are very athletic, and they play great defense on the wing. I'm anxious to see game two because if the Heat come out and dominate in game two and win, I want to see what kind of gumption the Mavericks have because I want to see if they regress to being the old Mavericks or whether they have some fight when they get back home. So I'm actually anxious to see how this is going to play out. Austin, what's your opinions of the series thus far?
good. I don't know. Let me run down the Mavs. I think offensively, the Mavericks, that's where they really lost the game. They shot 37.3% from the floor. You have to give Miami's defense credit, but the Mavs also missed way too many open shots. The bench was especially bad. They only had 17 points in total, and Jason Terry is a 20 to 25-point scorer per game off the bench. So only having 12 from Terry hurt, and then the rest of the bench only had 5. You know, Peja Stojakovic, he didn't show up. J.J. Barea, he didn't show up. So, you know, they combined. J.J. Barea and Peja Stojakovic combined to shoot 1 for 11 in 33 minutes. So that left Dirk to have to score, you know, more than 27, really. And 27 is a good game. I mean, Dirk balled, but it was rough. Defensively, I thought Dallas did a great job. And I'm going to say this to the Heat fans. If the Heat can only muster 92 points a game on 38.8% shooting, because that's what they did, they're going to have problems in this series because the Mavs are going to score more than 92 points most of these games.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Miami's been holding like opponents to within the 80s in this playoff. So you say that, but Miami plays defense like, I mean, right now they're the best defensive team still left out of the two.
I get that. And then they held, you know, LeBron only had 24. Dwayne Wade had 22 on 8 for 19. So they did a good job against the Heat.
Chris Bosh
was 5 for 18. Yo, he was 5 for 18. I think coaching-wise, they made some mistakes. Rick Carlisle will have to figure out how to get the Mavericks offense kind of flowing against that Heat defense. I think that Sean Marion said something in the Dallas newspaper that was interesting, and he suggested that Carlisle needs to take less control. And that could benefit the Mavs. You know, he said that Carlisle called too many plays to try and establish their rhythm. And then the other thing is the Mavs are atrocious at rebounding. I already alluded to that with Dirk. There's no 7-footer that should only average 7 rebounds a game if he starts and plays more than 30 minutes a
first
game.
First off,
Tyson Chandler had 4 rebounds.
Yo, he's like, Sean Marion. Sean Marion needs to come out in the press and say, I'm going over back east to get a haircut because his haircut game is horrible. shout out to Juwan Howard. Juwan Howard been having the sharpest cuts in the league for the last 20 years. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But
the other thing is playing Peja becomes a problem because when you play Peja, if you don't get 9 points, and I mean if you don't get 9 points quick, yo, he is going to get exposed at the three. Yo,
scorched.
Any average basketball player, not in the league, any average basketball player can get to the rack on Pages. So you imagine what LeBron is going to do when he sees Sky Page out there. So that's like, you know, that's,
I mean,
that's tough.
Adjustments have to be made. And you're right, Page's defense is atrocious. Let me ask you guys a question because I heard somebody say this, and I don't know whether I believe this or not. Let's say the Heat do win this series, but Dwayne Wade has the best series and wins finals MVP. Does that hurt LeBron at all, or does it even matter?
The fact that we have to talk about it means that it hurts him because it should be indisputable and decisive that LeBron James is the reason that the Heat win in the series. And the fact that he has two other dominant superstar players with him, it already kills it. It already kills it.
Yeah, I mean,
with that being said, go ahead, PJ.
No, I was going to say is I think if D Wade gets the MVP, then and he does have a crazy series and kind of outshines LeBron, it is going to kind of look like, I mean, at the end of the day, LeBron came to D Wade's team, so I mean it's going to kind of look like that, like LeBron.
All right.
I don't know. I mean,
I understand what you're saying, but see, let me ask you.
It's a tough one.
Like
it's a tough one. I don't know.
Because here's the thing: do you hold it against Kobe when you rank him, say all time, what have you, that he played with Shaq when he won those first three? Austin,
I don't hold it against him. I mean, I may bring it up in argument, or I don't hold it against him, but I do acknowledge, yeah, and I'll be fair about it and say, yeah, he played with one of the most dominant forces in the league. But there's never really been a player that won a championship without another very good player. So, I mean, at different positions, you'll have your good players, depending on, you know, who we're talking about and what team we're talking about.
It's kind of,
but go ahead.
Oh, good. I was going to say, it's kind of like what Jimmy always says with Dirk, which I agree with. When you say, okay, Jason Terry is my closer, so I'm going to carry the team up until halfway or two-thirds through the fourth quarter, and now it's your time to bring it home. Well, that's a large portion of what we consider, at least I consider, to be great. You know, that's one of the reasons that I'm so high on Reggie, I'm so high on Mike Bibby outside of the regular superstars, is because when it was time to win the game in the last 2-3 minutes, believe it or not, don't look at Mike Bibby now.
Sacramento
now,
Mike Bibby.
I'm laughing at the fact that, yo, you've been protecting Mike Bibby for 10 years now. You realize that Mike Bibby didn't even score? He didn't even score.
Mike Bibby nor Anthony scored. Neither one of them
scored.
He
used to be one of the only cats that would stand up to Kobe. Now, of course, he got it done to him just like everybody else, but the fact that he would go shot for shot. Now, not to get caught up in Mike Bibby, but if LeBron isn't the go-to guy, which we know in reality is really not, that's Dwayne Wade's job. That waters down your value.
Yo, Dwayne Wade tried to protect him, if you heard his John. Dwayne Wade said a couple days ago, he was like, yeah, the decision is LeBron's. It's up to him. Like, he has the ball, and, you know, he kind
of
decides what he wants to do. And we
work
off of that.
Of course he's supposed to protect
him. He was trying to protect him. I mean, obviously. I mean, it was blatant to me. And, I mean, that may be their philosophy, but I think D-Wade know at the end of the day, like, I mean, if you chart the entire season versus just this playoff, a couple playoff series, that, you know, the person that would handle it toward the end of the game would be D-Wade. I mean, because I just think I still think he's a better penetrator than LeBron. LeBron might be a more dynamic, strong, and even a better finisher, but I think D-Wade is a better penetrator in getting to the basket.
Yeah.
So, and plus, he falls every time he shoots. So, if nothing else, he's going to get to the line.
And the refs love Dwayne Wade. It's hard to officiate Dwayne Wade because he creates so much contact. That it's like, what is a foul, what isn't a foul. It'd be hard to officiate a game with him in it. So I understand where the refs are, but he gets every call. So does LeBron, really. They get every call.
No, they do get a lot of calls. I mean,
John in our chat room said that he doesn't think it would matter if Dwayne Wade wins MVP. I don't know. I mean, I can go. I don't know. I'm still, like, contemplating whether it would matter because I understand
it's
that.
Funny
because
anti-LeBron people will be like, yo, he ain't even get the MVP in the finals.
Yeah,
that's
but
what
I don't
you
know.
So it all depends on who we use it.
I don't know whether that's nitpicking or not because there's been finals like series where you got some jabroni comes out of the blue and wins MVP. Shout out to Joe Dumars. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know whether it will matter. But, see, the thing about LeBron is sort of like we said the other day is, like, a lot of this the stuff that people hold against him and the things that people say is all his own doing. This attention he gets, whether negative or positive, is all a reflection of, like, LeBron. I mean, at the end of the day, D-Wade was a free agent as well. But it's like everybody's so – and Chris Bosh as well. It's like it all comes down to LeBron. It's more of LeBron the great, LeBron's bad, whether, you know, right or wrong. All the attention is going to LeBron. So I don't know whether – it would matter whether D-Wade won, but I know that, you know, the LeBron haters would say that. Or shouldn't say haters, detractors.
But it's a negative, even that, though, Jimmy. If you think about it, LeBron has calculated how to get attention and how to create the brand and how to push the brand. Shout out to Maverick Carter. And what ends up happening now is we focus more on the media swirl and the Twitters and the Facebooks and all of that than the man's game. Yo, let's talk about the man. And I'm not talking about the Sports Center stuff. I'm not talking about the athletic display. I'm talking about the real game. You miss it. It's diluted for me.
So it was diluted. So you're saying not only does he have to win the chip, but he has to win MVP and be the reason.
I don't think he has to win MVP. I think he has to be the reason, though.
I do think he has to be the reason. And it's almost impossible to do that with somebody on your team that's not arguably, but is actually a top five player in the league.
Yeah, because here's the
you're
thing.
You're not running with Scottie Pippen. This is Mike Jordan and Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah, it's not like he got Smush Parker on his team.
but my
thing is this though. Like, so even if he has a great series, but you say what you're saying is he has to be the reason, but he doesn't have to win the MVP.
Yeah, no.
Because I mean, here's the thing: if they both have good series, like say if D Wade, you know, say the series goes seven, and D Wade ends up with like averaging like 34 points and like you know 8 assists and like you know 9 or 10 rebounds or something, and LeBron, his numbers remain consistent, then D Wade is playing out of his mind, so he would win it. But I mean, as long as LeBron is still playing well, I still don't think you'll say. I mean, you might say, "Yeah, D Wade." Like you said, the LeBron detractors will say, "Well, the only reason they won is because D Wade was playing like crazy." But
yeah.
I mean, LeBron, if he still plays well and does what he does and dominates in the way that he does, I don't think you can hold it against him because another player just played crazy in the series.
Real quick though, if anybody wants to call in, it's 234100012 and press 1. Already on the line, you can just press 1 if you have anything to say in reference to what we're talking about. And same for the people in the chat room, 323-410-0012. But
then, TJ, let me ask you a question, though, then, TJ, because isn't the reason that we loved Mike, even, we'll say, Magic, even Isaiah, is the fact that when called upon, those dudes could dominate a game and a series to a point where they stamped their imprint upon it. There was no question, you know, they had great players. Even Magic, you know, Magic had great players around him, but Magic has stamped his imprint on series. Like, yo, there's no question, we can't win this without you.
No, I understand what you're saying. I mean, it's not like he's out there like Mike Bibby doing nothing.
No. I mean,
so you're saying like because you're saying on a championship team, typically when they get to that level in the finals, the best player usually stands up and becomes the MVP because he stands up. He's clearly makes a stamp and lets everybody know he's the best player on the court for that series. So here's the thing. Like to me, it's like D Wade and LeBron, and we always talked about this. They're not the same player, but they almost are. So sometimes it could be contingent upon matchups or what the defense is giving you. I mean, I don't know. Like, I can't make that. You make a good point, but I can't. I don't know. To me.
And then the other, the other thing that weighs in that, it's not even. Let's go to the WNBA player. As much as we poop on dude, yo, dude is a 25 and 11.
Who, Bosh?
And when needed, yo, Juwan Man can put 30 on almost anyone.
Yeah,
Juwan Man
is under the radar.
The slowest up fake in the world, but that thing works, and his jump shot is water. Listen,
that's because he's making shots.
He's the best black European female player I've ever seen play. But
he's a finesse big man.
He's from Europe.
People call him soft, but I mean, you could call him finesse because that's kind of how he plays. I mean, he's still effective. He's still a good player. I mean, he does get overshadowed a lot by the two, you know, superstars. But I mean, I don't know. Like, here's the thing: it's hard with this is a strange situation because we don't usually see two players at their prime that are so close in terms of talent and skill level, like LeBron and D-Wade, playing for a championship. I mean, typically...
Well, let me ask you guys a quick question. What do you think about tonight's game? Who you got in tonight's game and why? Just real briefly, because we run out of time. But who you got in tonight's game and why?
Go ahead, B.
I got the Mavs because they can't play any worse offensively. They gotta only play better.
Yeah.
Don't do a disservice to Jason Terry. Like Jason Terry isn't a 12-point per game dude.
Let me ask y'all something. Do y'all think that Dirk, like, real quick, because Dirk actually came out, and I mean it's not a big deal, But he was kind of explaining his injury, and he was kind of explaining what things
man,
would cop hurt him.
Man, he copping pleas. He copping pleas already.
I was thinking about Jimmy when I heard this, because I'm like, yo, is he trying – do you think – all right, he's going to have to play through this, okay, because there is going to be pain. It won't affect his shot, but it may affect when he goes left. It may affect when he finishes at the rim. It may affect when people try to swipe the ball out of his hand. Do you think he's going to be strong enough mentally to absorb this pain and still play through this and put together a good
as
game?
As much trash as I've talked about Dirk over the course of the years, I'm actually hoping he does. But when he starts talking like that, yo, my man Rondo was
yeah,
playing with one arm. And it's just
old.
Basically, Rondo had
it
one
said,
arm.
I'm cool.
Like, I'm cool.
I'm
yeah,
cool.
I'm cool.
Yeah, Dirk was kind of explaining, like, yeah, it'll hurt if they smack the ball. I mean, I don't know. That might just be the type of guy he is. We'll see. It'll all play out when he plays. But it was interesting to hear because the obvious comparison would be to somebody like Rondo. Tonight, honestly, I have the Heat. Right now, we'll see what changes. I don't know what changes or adjustments they're going to try to make. But I think that right now, I just think at the end of the day, the Heat just have more firepower. And I think that they can guard on the perimeter and – I just think that's a problem.
You picked the Heat in six or seven. Was it a six, right?
I picked them in seven.
Oh, seven. Okay.
But
so
that was before
I
saw game one. I mean, and again, listen, I'm not saying that it's over, but I hadn't seen the matchup yet. So when I said it, not saying that it's over, but sometimes you see certain things and you're like, ooh, that might be a problem. Like, I don't know if they can rectify that.
Austin,
they can put a band-aid on it. I don't know if they can fix it.
Yeah. Austin, you said Dallas is fixed. Let me ask you a question. Do you want to change that now?
Yeah.
what's your new prediction?
Dallas and seven.
Ooh, we still like Dallas. Okay.
Yeah, Dallas.
So you think Dallas is going to make the necessary adjustments, B?
Yeah. This is my thing, right? This is my thing. Yo, no one is paying attention to the fact that Dallas held Miami to 92 points on 38% from the field.
You know why nobody's paying attention? Because Miami held them to 84. Yo, if you watch the whole playoffs, Miami hasn't given up a beam. They hold everybody
like 38%.
Now I'm appeal to your ball because you're a ball player. The team that's more likely to have a lower field goal percentage, the person that's shooting jumpers or the person that's driving to the rack, what's a harder shot?
The jumpers, of course.
Shoot the jumper.
Well, I'm looking at Miami as a team that gets to the rack. They go to the rack. Now they hit 11 threes, and that's because Dallas started eventually backing off to play that to pack that zone in. But at the end
still
of the day, if you shoot 38%, if you shoot 38% on driving to the rack, yo, that's pretty bad. If you shoot 37% on shooting J's, then that's the luck of the draw. You're going to shoot 37% today, but you're going to shoot 49 tomorrow.
But that means that you're looking at it as Dallas is having an off night and not being locked down.
Yeah, I don't think they were locked down. I didn't see that.
Because even the shot that Dirk made, somebody was in he had a hand in the
Dirk,
Dirk missed some shots that he had been making in the playoffs, though. He missed some shots that he had been making. I don't know if that was the injury or if that was the defense or what, but some shots, if you look back at that game, like he would make those in the series prior to this. So
Dirk scoring 27 isn't locked down. And the other thing about Dirk that we didn't talk about is he's going to get to that line 10 to 15 times.
Yo, here's my thing real quick. I also want to send a shout-out to my man Ralph Tresvant, a.k.a. Jason Terry, for getting his dunk blocked by the rim.
I know. And they called a foul on LeBron, right? He got the Grand Hill Sprite commercial dunk. That was the Grand Hill drink Sprite from back in the day when
the rim looked like Mutombo on that joint. Straight blocked his dunk. My man Ralph Tresvant tried to sneak a quick dunk in, man.
We gotta wrap
like
it. We gotta wrap it up, fellas. So Jimmy,
like
you want to take
like
us out
Miami.
Of
it? Yeah, I like my prediction is Miami tonight. I like Miami tonight in another close game. Anyway, thanks everybody for joining us in the War Room season. As usual, we hope you had a great time listening to the show tonight. And thanks to all the callers, Facebookers, tweeters, and chat room participants who weighed in on tonight's topics. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for another great episode of the greatest sports show on the third rock from the sun. We'll be previewing game 5 of the finals, and as usual, we'll be catching up to you in terms of all the sports stories. And that's if Game 5 is necessary.
Yo, my murder
may
is
not
rap, verbal attack is actionable fact. Tactical tracks match perfectly with graphic stats. Half of you lack the magical dap of tragical rap that tackles you back in shackles of that. That's the mathematical madness I'm on. The sadness is strong. The magic
pun was
the
so
nice. If Picasso lays you, there's lots of hateful skeletons locked in the closet of my castle. The great school, I'm proud of the great school. That's why I have to debate you. My raps are like cable slashing your face. You, that's how I master the grade you. I'm battling hatred. If he passes through my label, I'm snatching his halo. God, I'm crazy. You just send my father back. He's an angel. Language is fatal and it's hypnotizing. I'm only emphasizing. I'm still all about business and enterprising. I'm super lyrical with brain booster chemicals. That twist the tentacles inside of my mental projectable. Lyrically, I'm supposed to represent.
Black door, the super lyricist, your arch nemesis. Filled with the Punisher, that's my accomplice. Such as 2MCs, how they don't really want this. Electrifying shit, his excellency thoughts fit. These cats, they sentimental such, with a gentle touch. Dancing double dutch and all, saying nothing much. My sound waves lifting your chin up, like uppercuts. Newfound ways of ripping shit up. I develop, your spark cast well up. Still your miniature to me, naturally. I bring the extremity, musically intense. With the globe in suspense, contemplating where the world traveler been sent. The roots bless you with a strong record, long like an epic. Immerse you in some old next shit, ill poetic. Thought from Illidale, something like nothing else. My